This episode of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine was made possible by contributions from slaves like you. Spanky very much.
In the end, 49 nations, including the United States, came to Berlin for the Nazi Olympics and watched as Aryan athletes followed in the footsteps of the ancient Greeks, bringing fire from Mount Olympus in the first ever Olympic torch relay.
It's the end of the world as we know it, I feel fine.
Good morning, slaves, and welcome to another edition of It's the End of the World as We Know It and I Feel Fine, your best source for 100% vitamin-filled hot cop action.
What?
Your best source for 100% vitamin-filled hot cop action.
What?
Your best source for 100% vitamin-filled hot cop action.
What?
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you.
What?
I am your host, Stimulator, and October saw much action from the global insurrectionary makeup of the resistance.
That's the sound that a police! That's the sound that a beast!
In Seattle, four pigmobiles were set ablaze on the global day of action against police brutality. The anonymous Freedom Starter successfully torched three cruisers and one paddy wagon to a dark crisp. Seattle 5-0 suggested that the attack was payback for this. A video leaked earlier this year showing a cowardly piece of shit pig brutally beating a 15-year-old detainee. I say those jerk-off-of-thems got off easy. In Rochester, the PO showed their ass again as they attacked a peaceful anti-war protest. The Funk the War demo was grooving around downtown Roch City, demanding an end to the war in Obamistan, when the pigs descended on them Rodney King style.
Let it go! What are you doing? What are you doing?
Keep moving.
Why did you do this at a peaceful march? What are you doing to people?
Do what we say. Keep moving.
Well, I saw an anti-war demonstration of 50 or 60 people walking down to mark an anniversary that this country refuses to talk about. All we talk about is more troops. And then we were met with about 40 freaking cop cars coming down, police clubs swinging. The first person they went after was an African-American kid who was just watching the demonstration. So we called out for what it was, racism. And then they began arresting people for calling the cops false ass, for swearing at cops, things we thought were protected under the country. This is the kind of freedom we're bringing to Afghanistan.
He's arrested. I want to get. He's arrested for swearing in public.
On the other side of the world, at the IMF meetings in Turkey, cops in Istanbul were attacked by a barrage of Molotov cocktails. The Afghan resistance was there to oppose the meeting of the international money funnelers of the IMF, and banks and corporate stores were targeted and smashed. In Vancouver, as the resistance gets ready to disrupt the kickoff to
the five rings of death,
the RCM pigs have been harassing activists and going as far as threatening them with rendition. Here's Gord Hill, editor of the website no2010.com, commenting on a recent encounter with Vancouver's finest.
On October 20th, they approached me while I was walking down the street in the downtown east side where I live. And the officer, I told him I had nothing to say to them, but he kept following me down the street. He maintained a rambling monologue with me and told me that if I ever tried to go to the United States again, if I was ever in U.S. jurisdiction or custody, they would apprehend me if I was in the U.S. and send me to a far, far, far away place.
More Olympic coverage after the break. College and university occupations seem to be coming back in vogue. In the land of Amadeus Amadeus, over 1,000 students took over the Audimax, the main lecture hall at the University of Vienna, to demand better education conditions. In Greece, Italian author Alfredo Maria Bonanno was arrested for allegedly robbing a bank of nearly 50,000 euros. Bonanno, 72, is the celebrated author of such classics like Armed Joy and From Riot to Insurrection. But as the global insurrection continues, man and his capitalist cock continue their ongoing assault on Mother Nature. The much despised fart chokers from Massey Energy have begun blasting on Coal River Mountain to extract clean fossil fuels to provide electricity to the White House. This atrocious attack on the ecosphere comes on the heels of the 350 Day of Action, where millions of people worldwide peacefully demanded that the amount of carbon in the atmosphere be reduced to 350 parts per million. Here's author Derek Jensen commenting on the 350 movement.
If 350, if all it is just begging, then we're even more of a cop than we think we are. But if it's part of organizing a larger culture of resistance, that's great. So I love to make fun of pacifists, but the truth is, you couldn't have had Underground Railroads without the Quakers. And so we need the 350 movement as an above-ground arm of a movement to stop this. But, you know, I got to say one more thing. I don't like 350. I think it should be called the 250 movement, because giving 350, that's really, because what carbon dioxide levels have to be is pre-industrial. And so it should really be called the 250 movement, but they didn't ask me.
Deep water, deep water, senses me now. Power down like a wreck door, and you went child. Well, deep water, deep water, senses me now. Power down like a wreck door, and you went child. Well, oh, lucky, 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 lucky me again. I said it looks like it's time to use my feet again. Well, I just spent my last $100, God, I'll pay my bill again. Oh, so fast, oh, 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 I don't care. Oh, 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 I just don't care.
Deep water, deep water, senseless deep now.
Power down like a rag doll, shook on and chow.
Back in the day when National Socialism was an ethos embraced by millions of German sheeple, Adolf Hitler unveiled what we now know as the Olympic torch relay.
I'm here to watch the torch.
What do you think about the fact that the torch was unveiled first? It was invented by Hitler for the 1936 Olympics.
Pretty disappointing if that is true.
Yep, most of them out there have no clue about the Nazi connection of the torch. Yet masses of hypnotized Canucks gathered in Victoria to welcome this international symbol of fascism. Can you imagine if the Olympics would adopt the swastika and not rings as its logo? But nope, the Canadian sheeple butt this one just like the Germans did, with the same blind, hysterical zeal of a good Nazi. How ridiculous. The Canadians are even accepting the increased level of policing to protect
the five rings of death.
Well, right now, this square where protesters are gathering is surrounded by police officers who are greeting activists by name as they come into the park, creating a very chilling effect on free expression. In addition, Van Ock had sent out a brochure to every municipality along the torch run saying that they should discourage and prevent the distribution of leaflets along the torch run.
Even as millions around the world protested to bring attention to the problem of global warming, one of the main sponsors of the Olympics is a major financier,
tar sands.
I asked several Olympic enthusiasts what they thought about it, and their answer was very similar to this.
I don't have any opinion on that, I'm sorry.
Yep. These are dire times, and these major spectacles are like Nazi rallies on steroids. They keep the masses distracted, while behind the scenes, the fascists strengthen their military police state, destroy the ecosphere, and profit from our slave labor. Ask yourself, if we went back in time to when the Nazis were taking over, what the fuck would we have done?
The forces that subjugate us today are very powerful. They have an army, they have RCMP, they have all these security intelligence agencies that are meant to disperse our people any means necessary. And they do that with impunity.
There is no way to sugarcoat this, fellow slaves. We live in a fascist continent. Now what the fuck are we going to do about it?
The Olympics and get about the Olympics.
For the past several months, I've been splitting my time between doing this fucking show and working on my film End Civ. I want to give you all a little taste of what I've been working on. Enjoy.
Every day that passes, the world is in worse shape.
The glum-looking man you see on the screen is Derek Jensen. Derek is the best-selling author of several non-fiction books, including The Culture of Make-Believe and A Language Older Than Words. His books deal with topics such as surveillance, child abuse, the environment, and something he calls civilization. But it's statements like these that make him so controversial.
They're thinking of raising the Shasta Dam in California, and the reason that Senator Feinstein gave, was it is Californians' God-given right to water their lawns. You know, there is no way to argue with that, except with explosives.
That was Mr. Jensen in 2006, the same year he published a two-volume set called Endgame. In Endgame, he argues that there is an urgent need to bring down civilization.
If people would have brought down civilization 100 years ago, people in the Pacific Northwest could still eat salmon. There's going to be people sitting along the Columbia 50 years from now, and they'll be glowing, for one thing, but they'll be starving to death, and they'll be saying, "I'm starving to death because you didn't take out the dams that killed salmon." And those dams were used for barging and for electricity, for aluminum smelters, for beer cans. So, God damn you.
He lays out his case against civilization by enumerating 20 premises. Due to time limitations and the fact that most people would not tolerate a 20-hour movie, we will explore 5 of these premises and accompany them with real-life examples.
Industrial civilization, civilization itself, but especially industrial civilization, is not and can never be sustainable. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out that any way of life that's based on the use of non-renewable resources won't last. Civilization is a way of life characterized by the growth of cities.
So you've got groups of people living in a dense enough population that the local land base cannot support them. What that means is you have to get your basic resources from somewhere else because you've used them up where you live. So you're going to go out into the countryside and gather up whatever it is you want, bring it back in.
If you require the importation of resources, what that means is you've denuded the landscape of that particular resource.
There's no way that in the long term you can continue to destroy the land that you need for your survival or the waters that you need to drink and expect to continue to live.
How do you develop a mountain? Well, you reduce it to useful products. So pound it up, turn it into matrix for roadbeds, or you turn it into ballast for rail lines, or you turn it into the sort of coarse gravel that's used in heavy construction. When you're done developing the mountain no longer exists, and you can apply that same principle to the rest of the ecosphere.
If you have a finite amount of anything, if you start using it, eventually you use it up. And so it would seem that if your entire culture is based on, I don't know, let's take a random resource, oil, that you would think about what's going to happen when the oil runs out.
We found energy resources
that have allowed us to escape some of the kinds of limits that previous cultures have had to face much more quickly.
It used to collapse because they ran out of resources, easily accessible resources, the limit being the distance that people could travel with things like horses or other pack animals. That ended with the beginning of the fossil fuel age. Now they can go all over the planet and take what they want. So globalization has only accelerated this tremendously destructive process.
We've poured our wealth into building an infrastructure for daily life that has no future. I do think that the oil problem is going to accelerate within the next 3 to 5 years, maybe even sooner. The numbers indicate that we've probably peaked in global production.
Where do you find the break from that? I mean, it's all of it is a giant machine or ensemble that just moves forward. Technology, for example, never takes a step back. This whole thing just keeps going like a cancer.
I don't know of any civilization that's been sustainable. I don't believe there ever has been one. Technology, really in its essence, is our culture's determination that comes from certain philosophical and historical sources that we will be nothing else but more relentlessly technological.
There is no like clean green path to living at a lifestyle that we are all used to in industrialized nations. This way of life is over.
Civilizations are often cutting their own throats very visibly, very obviously, but they just keep on doing it.
It's my belief that the human dimension of this is self-extinguishing, and it'll take other species with it, as it is doing demonstrably all around us right now.
The first written myth of this culture is Gilgamesh deforesting the plains and hillsides of Iraq. When people think of Iraq, is the first thing they normally think of cedar forests so thick that sunlight never touches the ground? That's how it was prior to the arrival of this culture. So as a longtime grassroots environmental activist, and as a creature living in the thrashing endgame of civilization, I am intimately acquainted with the landscape of loss, and have grown accustomed to carrying the daily weight of despair. I've walked clear cuts that wrap around mountains and drop into valleys and climb ridges to fragment watershed after watershed, and I've sat silent near empty streams that two generations ago were lashed into whiteness by uncountable salmon coming home to spawn and die.
Out here in BC and across North America, when they do industrial logging, they actually take and just remove all the trees. They level everything. They leave nothing but stumps and slash piles. And they burn the slash piles and they take out all the timber. And what's left is a wasteland. It's like they take a rainforest and turn it into a desert. That's what a clear cut is. They use them for pulp. They export them whole to the United States and to Japan. There's not very much milling that happens anymore in BC. It's just getting exported for pulp and paper and fiberboard and plywood and whatever else. Not a lot of value added.
let's say we were sitting in the middle of a forest, chances are the original growth has been clear cut for lumber for development purposes, and what you're seeing is second or even third generation growth that's occurred over the last 100-150 years, depending on what part of the United States you happen to be in.
There's still a strong push to harvest as much of the western red cedar as they can. They're bringing in huge helicopters to do that. And they're high grading, selecting only the really good high quality timber and leaving the rest laying there, you know, in a junk heap. So that's why we keep on, you know, fighting back. I think the last straw was when they wanted to log the Valley of Ista because of its historical and spiritual significance to our people. But they logged it in spite, you know, just to make a point against our resistance, against our overall position, you know, with regards to treaties or encroachments of industry development in our territories.
It destroys the soil. In a lot of these areas, like this clearing behind me up on the hill, you can see the soil is exposed. The ultraviolet kills off all the mosses, the funguses that hold the forest, that hold the soil together. When the stumps rot and the roots die, then the slopes slide. And often there's not much regrowth, there's no regeneration of the forest. They do some replanting. It doesn't always work because there's no soil left. It washes down into the streams, it kills the salmon, it fills up the reservoirs, it causes all kinds of flood damage downstream.
This is also a tremendous resource that, you know, the life on Earth has provided in order to make more life. I mean, the basis of life on Earth is soil. Without it, we would not be here.
That's terrorism. Stripping down on all the trees, ripping out the trees in the forest, and now they're going to rip out the guts of the land and what's there, looking for copper and gold. And there has to be some kind of focus to address the injustice to our people, the injustice to the land, to the water, to the wildlife. Injustice to the marine life and the salmon life, and the injustice to the people that want to stand up for it.
When we block the road, these trees are very valuable, and the laws are all profit-driven. They're all driven by the corporations. The police are there to enforce the corporation's right to log, not to enforce our right to stop them and protect the ecosystem. There's so little that's left of the old growth forest like this that we see on the sides here, that people are putting their bodies on the line. They are willing to make huge sacrifices to stop the forest from being sacrificed, and the water and the air quality and the global climate.
Now, how many people are they going to drag away and put in jail so that they can continue to exploit the land for mega profits? Wildlife habitat is being destroyed. Our rivers are being polluted. The salmon are disappearing. This is an atrocity. This is a violation of Aboriginal rights. I will not go to jail.
If Nazis or other fascists took over North America, what would we all do? What would we do if they implemented Mussolini's definition of fascism? Fascism should more appropriately be called corporatism because it's a merger of state and corporate power.
What if this occupied country called itself a democracy, but most everyone understood elections to be shams, with citizens allowed to choose between different wings of the same fascist or following Mussolini corporate party? What if anti-government activity was opposed by stormtroopers and secret police? Would you fight back? If there already existed a resistance movement, would you join it? Would you resist if the fascists irradiated the countryside, poisoned food supplies, made rivers unfit for swimming, and so filthy you wouldn't even dream of drinking from them anymore? If fascists systematically deforested the continent, would you join an underground army of resistance, head to the forests, and from there to boardrooms in the halls of the Reichstag to pick off the occupying deforesters, and most especially those who give them the marching orders? Give me a threshold, give me a specific point at which you finally take a stand. If you can't or won't give that threshold, why not?
And that about does it for this edition of Is the End of the World's When Wondering If You'll Find. I'd like to thank the following slaves for helping make this shit real. Paolo, Gail, Alfonso, Gwyn, Vincent, Charles, Emily, Bernadette, Peter, Jim, Thomas, Isaac, Maureen, John, David, Andrew, Maureen, Noah, Dan, Michael, Christy, Ted, Mike, Kurt, the Bartons, Richard, Michelle, Corey, David, Courtney, Celia, Christopher, Chad, Sandra, Mary, Kyle, George, and Christine. Cryptopus, I want to let y'all know that I posted two new clips from my upcoming film, NCIF. So check them out at ncif.com. To comment on this show, or for links of independent media coverage of the five cock rings of death, just visit my fucking website, stimulator.tv. Now go fight some fascists.
Remember, kids, you can podcast high-quality video of this show at submedia.tv.